This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Quinn,
I'm leaving on a jet plane. Gotta pack
my life for 3 months. But you actually have a return ticket booked.
I do. I do have my return ticket booked, but I might change it.
Because you might stay and fiddle around.
Maybe I'll fiddle around. We might, you know, we might add a little Ireland couple dates next week at the end of the tour. So, you know, things are shaken up. We don't know. It's all very scary.
Okay.
But I'm packing and I have to pack for 3 months. And
yeah, there's no way to do that, by the way.
There's no way. But I also, like, here's the thing. I have to carry all my stuff, right? So
that's good. That's going to save you in the end.
That's going to save me in the end. And we have new costumes. Oh, my gosh. We have new costumes. Can I show you?
Can I see?
Mm-hmm. Yes. They're not us in it. But I think they're going to look great together. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. These are great. I love the colors.
Yeah. And then she's going to have, like, a hot
pink sock. I
think
this is great. This is so much more fun than before.
I think so, too. I think, too, like, yeah, we're just, like, adding some color is going to be the thing.
I like it a lot. I think you're going to feel good in it, too.
I hope so. They're making some short sleeves. Like, she's cutting sleeves off of these shirts and making them short-sleeved, which is really fun. My flight leaves at 7 a.m. tomorrow.
No matter what. Fortunately, not to the UK.
I'm just going to New York tomorrow, and then I leave the next day.
You're just doing one night here?
One night in New York. One night only.
You're going to stay up all night?
I'm going to stay up. Like, should I just get used diner? To it? Like, I'm going to get used to the time change.
Yeah. Smart.
Thank you.
Griff was violently ill this week for like 3 days and three nights. He was throwing up and couldn't stop to a point where he ran out and could only like dry heave, which is like always the saddest to watch a child go through. But he has never been sick like that. So he was really scared. And every time he threw up, he would basically climb on me and then throw up on me. So I was covered in vomit all week.
Quinn.
And he was crying. And he was like crying and lying in my lap. I couldn't be away from him. He was like a koala. He just like had to be on my person, which was so sweet. And I was like, oh, now I get Munchausen's. No, just kidding. But it was really cute that he was like
Munchausen's
in my
by
lap.
Proxy. Quinn, Munchausen's right, by right, proxy. Right. You don't get Munchausen's. You get Munchausen's by proxy.
Well, he was so cute. And he was like, Mama, put my throw ups away. And I was like, I can't, pal. And he kept telling us to, like, turn them off. Or, like, he kept, like, requesting to not be sick anymore, which was so heartbreaking. And I had to sleep with him in his tiny bed every night because he was throwing up. And every time he'd, like, sit up to throw up, he'd be so upset and confused that I just needed to be, like, right next to him.
Oh,
getting thrown up on.
This is the first time you've had a barfy child, though, because Koa's never
they
had,
both
like, a
got
full barf.
Noro last year this oh, time okay. But I wasn't in town for it.
Oh my god.
Matt was with them, and then I got home and got Noro right when I got home. But this was like maybe the flu. I don't even know what it was. I mean, who cares, honestly? People kept being like, do you think it's this? Do you think it's this? And I was like, I don't give a fuck what it is.
I just want it gone.
As long as it's done. And then when it's gone, you're just like, okay, who cares what it was? Like,
yeah. You know,
because like, there's no medicine for shit like that. You just have to like be, take care of your kid and then they get better eventually.
Poor thing.
It was so sad. It was truly.
It was truly darkly creepily.
It is like really sad and hard to watch someone you love be sick and not be able to help them. And I'm glad that that is not my day to day. Oh, speaking of, one thing that was really interesting the other day is that Koa was said that to Matt. Like, Matt was asking him, like, do you, for something he feels grateful for? And he was like, I'm grateful that my family and me are healthy. Like, we're not really, we don't have a big sickness. And Matt's like, yeah, that's a good one. And then Cole goes, but I probably shouldn't talk about it because that's bragging, right? And that could make somebody that does have a sickness feel bad.
Aww.
And it was so smart that he, like, already gets that sort of odd dynamic of, like, being thankful sensitive for what you have, but also not being, like, flashy about what you have. Or, yeah. I don't know. It was interesting.
That's interesting. I'm wondering where he's picking that up. I think it's been so interesting being around my nephews and being around kids and stuff, like just what's planted in their brain and what sticks, you know, like you never.
Oh, here's one. You're going to love this one. He told me the other day, sometimes he and Ozzy, instead of doing pinky promise, we use our middle fingers. And I go, okay. And he goes, yep. A fuck you promise. I was like, okie dokie.
I really like that.
Fuck you promise. It feels like it's really serious. Like,
it's
that's
really
like a,
serious. It's no
like
joke.
It's a no bullshit promise. This is a fuck you promise. Like, we're doing this. He's so funny. He's been like cracking me up. The other thing that he told me the other night, I was lying with him and he was like, I gotta go to bed. And I was like, why? And he's like, I've been meeting with a group of witches and ghosts in our living room at night. Of course, in my dreams, it happens around midnight, but they've been teaching me things about monsters and beasts. And I really want to get to bed because tonight is unicorns. And I was like, oh, okay, bye. And then the next morning, I'm like going poop and he's like, I've got to come in. And I'm like, you always do. And then he like barges in and he goes, I got an A in unicorns. And I was like, awesome.
You did it. So proud of you. Really, really proud of you. Stellar job, Koa. Hey, you might not hear this until you're like 25, but stellar job, Koa. I'm really proud of you. Aunt Carrie's really proud of you. Really, really proud of you.
Yeah, nailed it.
My nephew, we have this like hand sanitizer, I guess, you know, that everybody likes. And his cousin was around, his cousin on his mom's side. So we went to the beach with them. And you know, his one cousin and I just got along really well. You know, we were just hanging out. She asked for my phone number later, you know, so I'm like, I got like an 8-year-old texting me stuff, being like, can I have a picture of you? And I'm like, this feels weird. I don't feel comfortable sharing a picture
of myself.
I want to
see the picture you sent.
You know what I did? I sent a picture of me with her cousin, Tommy. I was like, I'll send you a picture of me with my nephew because that feels
so funny if you did just you.
I mean, I got to.
And you're like.
And then she was like, can I have a pic for your profile? I like having pictures of you. And I was like, I don't know why you like having pictures of me because I don't send them to you. This is the picture that Tommy took of us. It's a selfie.
Oh, cute.
He like picked my phone up and started taking selfies. And I was like, we are in a new world. Anyway, his brother, she had said something about like the hand sanitizer being $10. So every time the hand sanitizer came out, Jack was like, that hand sanitizer is $10. And he would tell like everybody. He's like, that hand sanitizer is $10. And we're like,
sounds like he's selling it.
And then he's like, we might have money left over, as we kept saying. We might have money left over. But I got to tell you, I was thinking about Koa today or this last week because he's obsessed with Number Blocks, one of my nephews. And I was like, I've been telling them to watch Number Blocks because it really does teach math. It's pretty wild. So Jack is obsessed with numbers and he's really into math right now. So he's like, what's
a
party
TV
square
out there these days?
There is. There's like a lot of really cool educational TV. Although someone had posted something of like what's cool about old TV, like when we grew up, is it just was fun. It was like, no.
Yeah.
It was just fun.
It wasn't a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
It was just like
a spoonful of sugar.
Here's a weird thing we do. Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
Next episode. And it's kind of like what we're doing with this podcast. It's like, here's a weird thing we're doing.
Bye. Next episode.
Bye. Well, whatever. That was something.
There. Good luck.
I did close my show this weekend.
Congratulations. And that was,
we sold out the final weekend. So there was like.
Oh, that's exciting.
I was waiting on like four tables, which was fun. It was like a fun dynamic. And we had a lot of like rogue guests that did some really crazy things because it was choose your own adventure. And there were so many different ways the end could go. And they always have to come up with like a distraction for the host to steal something from us. And there was
does it ever really work or you always know what they're doing?
Well, you always know what they're doing, but it's fascinating to see what they do because every audience comes up with a different way to distract us.
Have you had a favorite?
I mean, there was an interesting one where they took the two male hosts and they were trying to pit them against each other and do a push-up contest to prove who, like,
that's
who
fun.
Was more masculine. There's, like, birthdays. There have been proposals. There have been rats. There have been cockroaches. There have been big speeches that I've really liked that have had like little to do with anything that's gone on that day. There have been like fake Karen moments where they like yell at the staff. Like, ooh. There have been so many strange things, but it's been great. I mean, I've loved doing it.
Do you think the show will be remounted or is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think so. I mean, now they're doing it right now by private buyout, and we have a private buyout for it in May. And then there was like a Seattle company that was interested in mounting it for their season. I'm not really sure what's going to go on, but it was definitely like so much fun to do for that amount of time. And to like, you know, it's been a while since I've been in a show that was on rep that way.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was just nice to like be like, oh, I got used to the neighborhood and the theater and the cast and the crew. And I knew a lot of the crew ahead of going in and some of the cast. And it was like truly like fun to show up and see everybody.
Totally. Ugh, yeah. I'm so proud of you. Congratulations, Quinn.
Yeah. And the creator was a very cool person who is now working for Punch Drunk in London and probably coming up with something very exciting that they're going to do.
Shy?
Arlo. Shy is the producer.
Gotcha. Well, if Arlo wants to come see a little show in London, you should let them
know. I will tell
them. Please let them know. I would love for them to come see our show.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, please. I could use literally any help at this moment. Thank you so much.
You got it. You got this.
Okay. So, by the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
That's Carrie Ipama.
That's Quinlan Posner.
And you're going to love this name.
And I can't wait to thank some freaking Patreons.
How about Winter? Winter is coming.
Wait a minute. Winter, are you my therapist? Are you my therapist?
Your therapist's name is Winter?
No, my therapist's name is Season, which I've said before. But I'm just wondering, it could be a great alias to come in and just say my name is either Winter, Spring, Summer, or Autumn.
But Winter's definitely a cool name.
Winter's an amazing name. Winter, do you want to be my therapist? You basically are because you listen to my problems every week. But Winter, we want to be
Winter,
your
you
friend.
Actually give me seasonal affective disorder. You're the opposite of therapy for me. You make me want to end it all, Winter.
Why do you live in a place where there is a winter? If it makes you so sad, it makes no sense at all. But I love you, Winter, the person who joined our Patreon today, because you are just joy. Joyful, 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 joyful.
Joy. Joy, 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 joy. Winter.
Winter. There it
winter
is.
Winter is coming.
I hope she comes. I hope she's coming. I hope someone's coming. Get your mind out
of
the gutter. TMI,
I just Winter,
meant like coming.
But,
I know. Why did you go
it.
There? Why did
it's
you go
out.
There?
I didn't. You did. Everyone went there. You went there, and then we all went with you. But you were the
Here's
leader.
The thing, Winter.
You
I'm
held
really
the
sorry.
Baton.
Winter, I'm sure that was like a joke that everybody said to you, and I know it wasn't creative, and I know it was an easy joke, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to take away from your name. To put it with Game of Thrones and also to make a horrible joke at your expense. So I'm really sorry.
Winter, Winter, does it hurt like a splinter? Can't you take a hinter? Change your name. Okay, let's do... I like it. It's like some sweet, some salty. There's a balance.
This is what
there.
The people come
let's
for.
Do...
A little sweet, a little salt.
Let's do Laura K.
Laura K, do you feel like you're on display? Because we're singing to you, hey, hey.
Today, Lauren K.
Laura.
Thank you. Laura K. Do you like filet?
Do you eat filet?
We both did it.
Laura K, do you like filet? Or are you a vegetarian?
I don't know what rhymes with vegetarian. Laura K.
Nothing does.
Are you gay? And by that I mean happy today.
We bet you are because you're here. Hey, hey. Listen to a song about you.
So just that's press play.
Kind of okay. We hope you stay after this song.
I love how Laura K. is probably like the easiest thing to rhyme because it's A at the end.
And we really struggled.
And I struggled so hard. Laura K., thanks for joining Patreon.
One. Not an easy one. Go ahead. Tell us a story, Carrie.
Oh, I'm going to tell you a little story. I'm going to tell
you. But first, a word from our sponsors. Maybe.
I don't know. We'll see. Honestly.
Start throwing it in all the time. Just
start
hopefully.
Being like, we're for our sponsors.
Wouldn't it be funny? We could just do a bunch of that.
What if a... Hey, question. Would you guys listen to a full episode of us just thanking our sponsors and hopefully trying to get paid for it? Would you guys listen?
Yeah.
Be honest.
Come on.
Right in.
Do it. Be a mensch.
Be a mensch. Thank you so much. I got this information from Wikipedia, FBR Archives, Tahoe Quarterly, Midland Daily News. I'm going to take you back to a little time called August 26th, 1980.
Oh,
the hairs are big. We've just left the 70s. Is disco dead? I don't know this time of the world, but here we are. Three guys dressed up. No, let me go back up because we don't want to say dressed up. That's a spoiler. Three guys show up at Harvey's Resort Hotel. I think it's a casino. Whatever. Hey. They show up, and it's in Lake Tahoe, okay? So they show up at this hotel, and they pull up in a white van with IBM on the side. So they look like pretty professionals. And not to mention what they're wearing some blue workers' coveralls. Pretty great look, if you ask me.
And it's like a Michael Myers.
It's like, it's giving Michael Myers, but I think they, again, they have IBM. So like, it's like... When you're wearing coveralls, it's like, are you, there's a couple options you could be. Like, are you going to murder me? Or are you a laborer? Or do you just look cute?
Is it a Luke?
Or is it, do you just look cute in coveralls? Me, it's typically.
That's one of my newlies this month is a blue coverall. So
I'm debating
frankly.
Bringing a coverall to London. Do I bring it? I think it could dress up.
They're
the problem
so
is
cute. You can do anything with
them. I know. I got the black one that I wear for the show that I got. I got a free little black one for the show. The problem is again. It's a lot of fabric to fit in a little bag. Okay, let's go see. We're going to see if we can maneuver it today. Anyway, so speaking of maneuvering, these guys in blue coveralls come in and they're like carrying this huge machine and they're like having a hard time like getting it in the door. We've all been there. We've all seen it. We've all ordered from Amazon boxes that are too big. So in fact, like at the building, a security guard holds open the door for this group of three guys and they get in the hotel and they take the service elevator up to the second floor and they take this big machine and it's like the size of a copy machine. So checks out with IBM and they bring it to the second floor of the casino to an unoccupied office. Okay. And spoiler alert, it's not a copy machine. I feel like I gave away the ending, but here it is. It's not a copy machine. It's a freaking bomb with a 1,000 pounds of dynamite.
Holy dynamite.
It's at State Lines, Nevada. Or Colorado. Okay. It's a southeastern shore of Lake Tahoe. Okay, that makes sense. I was like, what is going on? State Line, Nevada? Move on. That's weird. Also, it corrected to Stateliness, Nevada, which is not what I needed to say. So.
That's not it.
That's not it. So, it's a freaking bomb with 1,000 pounds worth of diamondite. Yes, I said that correctly. It's one of the largest the FBI has ever seen. So, not only do they leave this... bomb there. They refer to it, by the way, as a machine. They leave sort of a ransom note, a blackmail letter, and it's in an envelope And it's three pages typed up, and it's addressed to the management. And at the top of the letter, it says, "Stern warning to the management and bomb squad." Now you might go, wait a minute, they just left this bomb second floor of this hotel. What if somebody like walks in and stumbles and kicks it and it goes off? Don't worry. They placed toothpicks and glue in the doorways prevent someone from wandering by and accidentally triggering the device. That is all that was written. I don't know what that means. Like, did they put toothpicks like at the door so that nobody would walk in and it was like a weird booby trap? Like, I don't
know.
Who's
in charge?
Who's in charge?
Baby? This is insane.
It is wild. So I'm going
to
read.
Go to the Duane Reade and get everything you can for security. Like, what?
But don't spend any money. Actually, do me a favor. Go to the local
Olive
Garden.
Here's 67 cents.
We spent all of our money on this bomb. Hurry. Go to the local Olive Garden. Go to the local wing place and get toothpicks. They have plenty. So they place these toothpicks on the door so that no one walks in. And so they leave. And about 20 minutes after these three guys leave, a manager contacts casino security. And you know what? And you know what? It's on. This is a bomb, and they got to figure out how to defuse it or pay the ransom and figure it out. So I'm going to read a little bit of the extortion note so that you know what's going on.
Please.
Because, listen, I could tell you about it, but let's just hear it from the source. To the management, a stern warning to the management and bomb squad. Do not move or tilt this bomb because the mechanism controlling the detonators in it will set it off at a movement of less than 0.01 of the open end Richter scale. So it's like any touch of this, boom.
Oh, ooh, okay.
Don't try to flood or gas the bomb. There is a float switch and an atmospheric pressure switch set at 26 to 33. Both are attached to detonators. Do not try to take it apart. The flathead screws are also attached to triggers, and as much as a quarter to three quarters of a turn will cause an explosion. In other words, this bomb is so sensitive that the slightest movement either inside or outside will cause it to explode. It gets worse. If it can.
Oh, how could it?
This bomb can never be dismantled or disarmed without causing an explosion.
So you say.
Not even by the creator. Only by proper instruction can it be moved to a safe place where it can be deliberately exploded or where the third automatic timer can be allowed to detonate it. There are three automatic timers, each set for three different explosion times. Only if you comply with the instructions in this letter will you be given instructions on how to disconnect the first two automatic timers and how to move the bomb to a place where it can be exploded safely.
This is a smart letter. If they're telling the truth, I'm surprised. But either way, I'm like, this is well done.
All right. I'm going to keep going. I feel like you want to hear the letter. I'm going to read. I got this from the FBI site. I should just keep reading it.
I absolutely do. Okay. I absolutely do.
Warning. I repeat, do not try to move, disarm, or enter this bomb. It will explode. If exploded, this bomb contains enough TNT to severely damage Harrah's across the street. It was across the street from Harrah's Casino. This should give you some idea of the amount of TNT contained within this box. It is full of TNT. This letter is a little
TNT too much.
It's a little repetitive. If I have a note,
I just
it's
a
little
they need
repetitive.
A good editor.
It was made on a typewriter, so it's like really hard to edit, as you well know. It is our advice to cordon off a minimum of 1,200 feet radius and remove all people from that area. Demands. We demand $3 million in used $100 bills. They must be unmarked, unbugged, and chemically untreated. Well, this is 1980. That's like a billion. If we find anything wrong with the money, we will stop all instructions for moving the bomb. Instructions for delivery. The money is to be delivered by helicopter. The helicopter pilot is to park at 23 hours as close as possible to the LTA building by the light at the Lake Tahoe Airport. It is to face east. The pilot has to be alone and unarmed. The pilot is to get out and stand by the chain link fence gate. He is to wait for further instructions, which will be delivered by a taxi that will be hired. The driver will know nothing. They may also be delivered by a private individual or through the nearby public phone at exactly 0010 hours. The pilot will receive instructions about where to do and what to do. Before the pilot enters the helicopter, he has to take a strong flashlight and shine it around the inside of the helicopter so that it will light up the entire inside. We must be able to see it from a distance with binoculars. We want to be able to see everything that is inside the helicopter so that we can be sure there is no one hiding inside and that there is no contraband inside. Conditions.
Okay, that seems...
This just seems like a lot. There's like a lot more.
No, no. I do think you have to keep reading it. I think we're all interested. Okay, I mean, cool. I'm very interested.
Okay. Conditions of the business. And also, I think it's important to note, sometimes when you read like bad ransom letters, it's just good to know, like, what would you improve on? You know, like, what would you have done differently?
I think we can workshop it as well. Yeah.
Conditions of the business transaction. These conditions must be followed to the letter. Any deviation from these conditions will leave your casino in shambles. I'm sorry. Will leave your casino in a shambles. God, the editing is bad. Also remember that even a very small earthquake will detonate the bomb, so do not try to delay the delivery of the money. I love that they're using like a natural disaster as like a threat.
Like, it's fun. It might not even be our fault.
It might not even be our fault. Here's this bomb. We don't know how to deactivate it. Let's see what happens. One, all news media, local or nationwide, will be kept ignorant of the transactions between us and the casino management until the bomb is removed from the building. Two, the helicopter will be manned only by the pilot. By the way, do they know what media does? They're going to get one whiff of this and like, goodbye. Okay. Two, the helicopter will be manned only by a pilot. He must be unarmed and unbugged. We do not want any misunderstanding, which might cause us to have to take lives unnecessarily. You guys, you planted a bomb. Chill out. Don't be weird.
We don't trust you about your life-saving abilities.
Three, fill the helicopter up completely with gas. Four, the helicopter pilot, after he receives the first instructions, cannot communicate with anyone except the necessary instructions given and taken by the tower. All channels from 1130 to 1700 will be monitored. Okay. The designer of this bomb will not participate in the exchange, so it will be completely useless to apprehend any person making the exchange because they do not know how it works. I really love how...
I really like that they're like, you're not even going to want to arrest the guy taking the money because he doesn't know anything
really. I really like that too.
He's like super dumb, so don't even bother.
So like, don't worry
about
it.
And it's like, oh, then great, just let him get the money.
Yeah. And by the way, my boyfriend lives at camp as a model. Okay, they perform their duty for reward. And again, if you don't want to be stuck with 1,000 pounds of TNT, do not allow any investigation by local agencies, FBI, or any other investigative agency action before the bomb is removed. If the instructions are violated in any way by any authority, the secret of the handling of the bomb will definitely not be revealed.
I mean, it's so good. So this is a 16-year-old that wrote this. No. And if you do this, I am definitely
not gonna do that. It's not going to be like, here's the deal. It sounds like a parent. It sounds like a, you know what it is?
I will be
like a,
so mad at you.
It's legitimately like a babysitter wrote this, and I'm obsessed with it. I really like it. If the money is received without any problems, I'm just going to read it as that. If the money is received without any problems, 6 sets of instructions regarding the removal of the bomb will be given to you at different times. The pilot will receive the first set of instructions. He can carry it back with him. If the money is sold to the buyer without complications, you may receive the remaining 5 sets of instructions one by one via the Kingsbury Post Office by general delivery, or you may receive them all at once. The extent of your cooperation will make the difference. If you cooperate fully, it will ensure a very speedy exchange. We don't want to burden your business opportunities or cause more loss of money than is necessary.
That's thoughtful. So nice.
Aren't they cute?
I do love that.
They're super fun. Cute. Attention.
They seem super nice.
There will be no extension or renegotiation. Bummer. Demands are firm regardless. The transaction has to take place within 24 hours. If you do not comply, we will not contact you again, and we will not answer any attempts to contact us. In the event of a double cross, there will be another time sometime in the future when another attempt will be made. We have the ways and means to get another bomb in. You're welcome.
Okay. So now what?
To the pilot. There's more.
Oh, the pilot gets his own note. Yeah, of course. Okay.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The helicopter has to be filled up with gas. Do not come armed with any weapon. Do not bring a shotgun rider. It's kind of confusing. You know what I mean? Like, don't bring a weapon and not a shotgun rider, which means just like don't bring any passengers, which they already said come alone. All radio channels will be monitored.
Nobody gets shoddy.
Like, you're shoddy, like, what? What is happening?
A baby wrote it. It's going to be a baby.
Have no communication with anyone after you reach the airport. Do not try to be a hero. I love that. Arlington is full of them, and they can't even smell the flowers.
Oh!
Follow the orders strictly. You will make 5 stops, none of which will be at an airfield. You will have ample lighting for landing, so don't worry. The don't worry was me, not the letter. All sites are fairly level. One has about 2-degree pitch. There will be a clearance of more than 200 feet radius. We don't want any trouble, but we won't run away if... Wait, we don't want any trouble, but we won't run away if you bring it. Happy landing.
Happy landing.
That's it.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's cute, right? So,
yeah.
Obviously, spoiler alert, the FBI is called. Kind of a bummer.
I thought you were going to say, obviously, spoiler alert, it's a teenage girl.
No, it's good. I'll tell you who it is later, but I have to go on a little bit more of like,
do we know them?
Seriously, though, like, yeah. I'm going to be so disappointed if you don't follow these rules, because this is a bomb. And like, we're definitely gonna say no. Okay, definitely. So they later find out that the bomb is supposed to go off in about like 7 days. It's like very The Ring situation. And on this bomb, so they obviously, spoiler alert, they call the FBI, the bomb squad comes. I mean, they have to. Like, what are you gonna do? Just be like, sorry. I guess we'll listen to this teenage girl who gave us this note. Mm-hmm. Kind of a weird vibe. So on the bomb, again, it's like the size of a big printing copy machine. So it's like a big hefty guy. And there's all these switches on it. And what's worth knowing is some of the switches are dummy switches and some of them are real switches. So it's 1980 and they're like, we don't know what to do, right? So many of the switches are fakes. There is also a PVC pipe in there. They like do x-rays. They like try to figure out what's in there. It's lined with aluminum foil and there's a hanging bolt inside it. So if you tilt it, it would catch on the foil and possibly strike a match and detonate. The whole inside, they're lined with aluminum foil. So if anyone drills into the box, any bit could come into contact with the foil and set it off. The pressure switches, there's like the kind that are used in car doors, were on each corner of both lids, that if you lifted the lid at all, it would set it off. The screws, like they said on the time, they're attached to wires. So like a quarter of inch of a turn we'll set it off, as it stated in the great ransom note. There's a toilet float. You know those on the back of in your toilet tank?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So a toilet float inside would lift if they flooded the bomb. If they put water in it, and making contact with that would also make it explode. And then, like it said in the ransom note, an atmospheric pressure switch will also set it off. So they kept referring to this as the machine. And like I said, it can't be disarmed. So the most that they can do is try to figure out how to move it. But they can't figure it out. There's no really way. And so the FBI is like weighing a couple options. They're still in a casino. They're in a hotel. So there's a lot of people around. They're in Lake Tahoe. So they're like, okay, so one option is we can get 4 guys to move it. But
4 guys?
It's just like 4 guys, but like, there's no guarantee of safety that they will move it to a safe place. The other option is they're going to try to disarm it at the hotel. And so they'll have to remove that big radius of people. And they go, you know what? We're going to do that option. And I just want to be very clear here. What's funny about that is with the instructions of like a drop off and the ransom note and stuff, I have to make a note that the FBI goes to the spot where they believe the ransom drop is to occur based on the instructions in this list, right?
Uh-huh.
But the suspect was not at the location because there was some confusion of where this is. So it was a teenage girl. It was like a weird treasure map. And they were like, here's where you should meet us. And the FBI is like, we're here.
And
the person who made it was like, oh, that's the wrong spot. Shoot. I told them to make a left. Oh. Mm-hmm. It was a right. So they evacuate the building. They're like going to try to disarm this bomb. And the bomb is incredibly impressive. For many of the people on, they're like, this is the hardest bomb we've ever seen. This was clearly made by a mastermind. And so they've x-rayed this bomb. They have the letters. They have all these precautions. And so they think the best idea, what they're going to do, is that they're going to separate the detonators from the dynamite, right? If you can separate those, then the bomb will be inactive, right? It won't be able to go off. Even though the bomb maker said that a shock would trigger the device, the bomb squad is like, I think we can do it. So they made like a very special charge, and they used C4, which again, to me, feels like a bad idea. I don't know. I'm not a bomb expert.
We don't need any more explosives.
No, but they're like, you know what? Let's try to separate the detonators. So what it made sense to me was they were trying to lobotomize the bomb by separating them. So it's 33 hours after the bomb was dropped off. And their attempt to disarm this bomb is essentially a shot in the dark because they need to separate the detonators. But they didn't know that dynamite was placed in the top box containing the detonation circuit. So when they put in this shaped charge detonator on the top of the box, it's a bummer because it just detonated the bomb at 3:43 p.m.
No.
The good news is the bomb destroyed much of the hotel, but miraculously, no one was injured. This
really?
Is like done at such... Yes. Nobody was around it. They probably just like used a machine from a long way and like did it in as safe a way as possible, but it did like really fuck up the hotel. There were people, obviously, the news found out. There were people all around. In fact, like, there were cameras and people watching it all unfold. And so when the bomb went off and the building, like, shook and, like, shit just started falling, people cheered. I think because, like, people just like watching things explode. It's kind of like a weird move. Harrah's Casino, the casino across the street. The two, Harvey's and Harrah's, were connected by a tunnel. And so the Harrah's also sustained some damage. Their windows blew out. The damages from the bomb totaled about $18 million, which in today's money is like $60 million.
Should have just given the three.
But here's the deal. Here's my deal. They should have at the same point in time. I just don't believe, one, they couldn't give the three because the location was wrong for the drop-off. And two,
that does seem unfair.
Two, I don't think there was any guarantee that this bomb wouldn't have gone off before. You know what I mean? Like, the maker is like, I don't know how to undo it. Like,
right, when
you're getting that information, you're like, it's all a shot in the dark. So, and also, I just don't think casinos pay ransom notes frequently because I think it sets a bad precedent.
That's fair.
So
we don't negotiate with terrorists.
We don't negotiate with toddlers or terrorists. So
or teenagers.
I don't do it.
Yeah,
and in this story, I think it's all three. So the casino does not stay down for long. Don't worry. Harvey's opens parts of its casino in 48 hours, but the fully repaired casino will. I know, we were all so worried about this casino.
Get those slots up and running.
Yeah, really concerned. The fully repaired ends up opening like not even a year later, May 1981. So the question is who the fuck is behind this? Who is the mastermind? What 16-year-old babysitter is the mastermind of this? Well, who would want to blow up a casino? So it's like the people, obviously, like maybe someone with a gambling problem, maybe whoever this person is will probably have some experience with bombs. So that really limits it. They also know 2 months before the bombing of this casino in June 1980, a dynamite blast happened in the North Fresno and Clovis area by a bridge, by a creek. And the authorities found hidden dynamite in the areas by this creek. So they believe that that was like the test run before this bomb was made.
Gotcha.
While they're looking, they interview about 500 suspects. They issue a reward for anyone with further information. And they catch a break when the owner of a nearby motel gives them a license plate number of a suspicious white van. Why is it always a white van? I can never say.
What made it suspicious? Just that it was a white van.
Probably. I don't know that it was a white van, and also probably because like it had some guys painting IBM on the side of it. I don't know.
Okay.
The van belonged to John Burge Jr. And then So they go to mm-hmm. John Burge's home, and you'd think you'd find like a bomb mastermind. They find a guy with 5 roommates and empty beer cans and like weed. So they're like, this probably isn't our guy. And then they get another tip. So a little backstory, this woman went on this date with this guy and she was like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, did you hear about the bomb? And he's like, yeah, I did. They're offering a reward. And she's like, oh my God, they're offering a reward. And he's like, yeah, why? And she's like, that's so crazy because I was dating this guy and my ex-boyfriend, and he told me that his dad was the one that placed the bomb at Harvey's. So the guy's like, cool, cool, cool. Tell me more information. And she's like, blah, 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 blah. And he calls the FBI and he's like, hey, guess what? I know who did it. It's John Burgess Sr. Enter John Burgess Sr. He is a Hungarian immigrant who lives in Clovis, California. So very near where that first test dynamite went off.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. A little bit about him. There was a biography about him, so spoiler alert, it totally is him. He would claim that he flew for the German Luftwaffe during World War II, and he provided intelligence to the U.S. Now, this cannot be confirmed, but this is what he says. He alleges that he was also captured during the time that he was flying for the German army, and he was sentenced to 25 years of hard labor in the Soviet Gulag. 8 years into his sentence, he's released during a prisoner of war, you know, sort of like get out of war jail free card. He goes back to Hungary, and from Hungary, he moves to the U.S. Mm-hmm. He married, he had 2 sons. He would go on to build a successful landscaping business, but then he also got very into a gambling business that didn't pay very well. AKA, he was gambling all of his money away. Yeah. To be clear, the guy's not a good guy. In 2010, so fast forward, one of his sons would go on to talk about how incredibly abusive this man was, and he would beat his wife, like, within inches of her life. So much so that they ended up getting a divorce or separating, and sadly, she would end up taking her own life. Mm. So it's, like, not a good situation. After his ex-wife dies, he started going to Lake Tahoe more and more and spending more and more money and gambling mm-hmm. all of his life savings away. And he was inching closer and closer to bankruptcy. And it's at this mm-hmm. point that he has blamed Harvey's for taking his money. And so that's when he has this idea of, I'm going to build a bomb. I'm going to get my money back. I'll get you, Harvey's, even though I consensually gambled my life savings away.
So bizarre. So it's very misplaced anger.
Such misplaced anger. But it sounds like that's kind of this guy.
It's his deal.
So he's arrested almost a year later. It takes them a year to find out who this guy is. He is arrested August 15th, 1981. And he is convicted of making the bomb in order to extort money from the casino after losing $750,000. I guess the like extra $2.25 million was just like, I guess, interest he thought he was owed. I don't know.
God.
He got his sons to steal the 1,000 pounds of dynamite from the Helms power plant in the mountains. So his sons were involved. But in 1981, they pled guilty in exchange for testifying. I'm sorry, let me go again. They pled guilty for their roles in the bombing, but served no prison time in exchange for testifying against their father, which seems like it probably wasn't a hard thing to do because he probably wasn't a good guy. In 1982, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison without parole. So like really threw the book at him. His 2 accomplices mm-hmm. were not his sons. His 2 accomplices who delivered the bomb to the casino that day was Terry Lee Hall and Hall's father-in-law, Willis Brown. So Terry Lee Hall, they were sentenced in 1982 as well for conspiracy and interstate transport of explosives, which I really love that law because it's like, what law can we get mad at them for besides conspiracy? Oh, bringing a bomb on the interstate. That'll get them. Willis Brown, he enters a guilty plea in exchange for a reduced sentence as well. What's crazy about these two guys is, remember, John Burgess Sr. was trying to get $3 million out of this ransom, right? The two accomplices were paid, we don't know the exact number, but it was either like $100 or $2,000 to deliver this bomb.
Wow.
It feels
they
like...
They could have definitely gotten blown
They could have gotten bits. Blown to fucking bits. And he was like, I actually need all the money for myself. I just don't like that guy. In 1983...
A lot of reasons not to like him, I gotta say.
There's a lot of reasons not to
like
him.
You've convinced me.
Yeah, I don't like him. Especially like you're building a bomb that you can't even disarm. It's just lazy. In 1983, the final defendant, Ella Joan Williams, was identified as the typist of the extortion letter. She was the kid's babysitter. I'm just kidding. She wasn't.
Oh my God, I believe you.
She
I 100% would believe
it. But it was written by a woman, and I just think that's... Thank God for feminism. She was convicted. She was convicted of attempted extortion, conspiracy, and interstate travel in aid of extortion. We love to see an interstate law. In 1985, her initial conviction was overturned in an appeal. In 1985, she pled guilty to being an accessory in the extortion bombing and got a recommendation for parole from prosecutors. John Burgess Sr. was in jail. It's 1996, and he's 74 years old. And he dies of liver cancer 16 years and a day after the bombing. To this day, the Harvey's bomb was the most complex improvised explosive device the FBI has ever examined. And a replica of this machine has been used in training with the FBI up until 2009. They still use this.
Way.
Yeah, they use that bomb for training, which is just crazy.
That is so wild.
So that's the story of the Harvey Casino bomb.
Wow. That's a good one. I do like that. You want to hear...
Wait. And now a word from our sponsors.
And we're back. And Jack Handy does have a good dynamite quote, of course, which is, a good way to threaten somebody is to light a stick of dynamite. Then you call the guy and hold the burning fuse up to the phone. Hear that, you say? That's dynamite, baby. Nice.
Oh,
I tried
God.
It myself.
Jack
but
Handy.
I would try
still,
anything once.
My mind is blown. And I think in that case, you will only be able to try that once.
To try it once. I'm going to do a little bit of sleep paralysis stuff.
I like
We're going to talk like the health stuff through Healthline and Time. But then there's some great BuzzFeed, like, anecdotal just accounts of it that I thought were creepy. I'm going to start with a couple of those. It happens every time I fall asleep on my back. I wake up and I can't tell if my eyes are open or shut, but I can see my whole room. A dark presence is lurking on top of my wardrobe, and as soon as I notice it, I try and scream, but I can't scream and I can't move. The darkness slithers down the side of my wardrobe, across the floor, and looms over the end of my bed. Then it creeps all over me, trying to invade every orifice. I feel an immense pressure like it has pinned me down and is pushing its way into my ears, eyes, and mouth. The darkness then screams a terrible screech into my face, and I try to scream back until eventually I manage to jerk my head and everything disappears, and I'm alone in the darkness. It is the most terrifying of experiences. Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
You know, the last couple of months, I have been staying in different rooms quite frequently. Mm-hmm. And there has been moments, maybe not of paralysis, of just like complete and utter disorientation of like waking up and being like, what room am I in? I don't know. Where's my bed? Like, I don't know where I am.
I even have that I've been bouncing back and forth so much between my room and the kids' room.
Yeah.
And I will wake up and think I'm in my room and just be so disoriented suddenly when I realize I'm not.
Yeah. It's a really scary feeling. And also because all these hotel rooms, which is great. It's fun to stay in a hotel room. I don't know where I am. I don't know where's the door. It's just, So, but
yeah, you're like trying to get to the bathroom. You're not really sure.
Yeah, you're just like peeing in corners. Wait, that's not you.
Here's I'm going to give you one more little account here. The first time it happened to me was when I went for a nap during the day. I was lying on my side, facing away from the door. When I woke up to the sound of my door closing, I tried to turn around and see who'd come into my room, but I couldn't move. My eyes were wide with terror. I could see everything in my room, and I heard this thing walking around it. Then it sat on my bed, and I could feel the bed dip from its weight. It then shuffled toward me, and I felt like it began to spoon me. It was extremely tall. I was trying to move so hard, but I was just lying still. The thing started breathing on my neck and tickling my back, and then stood up and left after a few minutes. This was the most terrifying thing that has ever happened to me. So scary. So 1 in 5 people experience some form of sleep paralysis in their lifetime. And a lot of people, it's not just paralysis as it's named, but it is some sort of presence, an intruder, a beast, a demon, a ghost, a witch, whatever. It's when you wake up during the dream phase and your brain has turned up. The way we stay safe at night, like Mike Birbiglia has this problem, yeah. If you guys have heard of that comedian, where his brain doesn't do this, which is really dangerous. Our brain does a thing where it says you're dreaming, so anything can happen in our dream and our bodies are not supposed to react. That keeps us safe. So Mike Birbiglia, for instance, that is off, and he in a hotel can have a scary dream and break the window and jump out of the window, which he has done. He has jumped out of a hotel window and broken a bunch of bones. He needs to sleep in a zipped up sleeping bag cocoon to be safe at night that doesn't have a way on the end. Like, his wife needs to zip him into a thing to go to bed. Like, it's really wild. And we've on this very podcast talked about people that may or may not have had that disorder, but have used it
as a defense
when they have done a midnight murder in their sleep. So our body tries to keep us safe. It turns off signals and says, don't act this out. But if you wake up and you're still in that phase, you might be conscious, but it, like, the wires got crossed, so you're not able to move because your body's still doing the prevention.
Ooh.
Yes.
So it's like reverse of sleepwalking. It's like,
yes. And it doesn't totally account for these presences, because a lot of people see these presences, some kind of shapeless presence or an actual creepy, very specific looking demon or alien. Some people see a dead relative, like a ghost, but it's very specific to them who they're seeing. And different cultures have like themes within them.
Right.
So if you're in, there's Canadian Inuits who say that this is a spell that's been cast on you, like by shamans, and that's what's happening. And Japanese folklore, it's a vengeful spirit, and it's going to come after you. It's going to try to kill you. In Egypt and some parts of Italy, they think that it is supernatural what is happening, and that you are doing astral travel.
Wow.
Which, that's like where you leave your body and you can journey around and then come back into your body, which, oh my God, In Her Eyes was, I think, the TV show that I watched about that exact thing, about astral travel, and I cannot recommend it enough, especially if you liked Bad Sisters, because she's in it, one of the sisters, and it's so good. And astral travel is just like fascinating to me. It's the idea that you can, like, if you are good enough at lucid dreaming, you can astral travel and, like, project yourself out of your body and tell yourself to go places and, like, go into somebody else's house. Like, you're like basically like a shooting around Tinkerbell spirit. Brazilians,
and there's people that think they can do that?
Yes. And Whoa. Cultures that believe in that. So Brazilians think that it's a really specific demon that's coming, and its name is Pisadeira, which it means she who steps. And she's like a witch with long, creepy fingers that lives on rooftops and then comes into your house and sits on your chest and basically suffocates you.
Oh,
so
God.
There's all these different cultural things that are like, we it's happened enough that we need a name for it. We need an idea about it. And that got created at some point along the way. There are hallucinations called hypnagogic. Am I saying that right? Hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations.
Wait, it's those, hypnagogic or hypnopompic? You can't decide which one is how you say it? Or they're just
they
two different...
They wrote them both.
Thank you. I thought you were like, it's either pronounced...
They're referred
Quinn?
To either, and they're...
Oh, when I genuinely... Oh,
you thought I was looking at one word, and I couldn't decide if it was pronounced... Oh, God. No. No.
Hypnopompic. I was like, do you not know the difference between a P and a G?
So if you have a really vivid dream, right when you're falling asleep or waking up, it can feel like it's reality. So that's like a good explanation for what might be happening, that these are just dreams. But people will swear up and down, I was awake when this happened. But these dreams are usually there's a creature, usually there's sleep paralysis, and it is you're partially conscious, but you're still in REM. Like you're in the wrong cycle of sleep to be conscious. So it's almost like the dream world meets the waking world in this very bad marriage, and you're seeing stuff of dreams because your mind is still in dream mode, but you are also awake. It just sounds like the scariest place to be. And it's basically like taking a hallucinogen or something where it's like what you're seeing can feel very, very real. And you're sure that you're awake because you are awake.
Weird. Weird. Oh,
God, so scary. When you realize that you're paralyzed. So, okay, this happens. You realize, oh my God, I can't move. Now, what happens when a brain is scared like that and is like, oh my God, I'm paralyzed, is that your brain starts to shoot off signals to the rest of your body and say, you got to get out of here. Like, you got to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Flight. Like, flight, yeah. Flight, flight.
Get the fuck out.
It also sends messages to a part of the brain called the parietal lobes. That is the part of the brain that monitors neurons that fire those signals to move. But it's saying, okay, I'm firing signals to move, but nothing's moving. This isn't working. You're paralyzed. So your brain freaks out, basically. Yeah. Your brain's like, I'm broken. And because there's all these mismatched shooting in different directions, spasmy thoughts and ideas happening all at the same time where your brain feels like it broke, that affects your brain's sense of self.
Oh, so, no.
What your brain will then attempt to do in that moment is try to tell you who you are. It'll be like, okay, what am I? What am I? I am this person. And it will fill in a blank. It will basically be like, this is what you are, and try to show you an image. The image might end up being like, I see a person, I see a ghost, I see a demon, because it is like almost like it's projecting a hologram for you to look at to know that you're there, but it's not doing a good job. The other thing that it's doing when it does that is that it's making you feel like you're out of your body. So your brain knows that its job is to tell stories, okay?
Okay.
It has to link everything that happens. So if you see things that happen, it's your brain's job to fill in the blank and tell you a story about this image and why it relates to that image. And that's why memory is so faulty, because our brain does a lot of
filling in the blanks,
not necessarily, and then telling you later that was fact when really you made some jumping from one point to another inventions.
Right.
Okay. But your brain needs to make sense of everything. It knows that that's its job. And when everything is cross-wiring and it can't make sense, it freaks the fuck out. If you are having a sleep paralysis moment, you are feeling like you can't breathe, you're feeling scared, your body can't move, it's like I'm choking, I can't, there's pressure because I'm perceiving the fact that I can't move as pressure against my body.
Right.
I need to explain right now why that is happening. And I am in like an REM state. So There's no way that this is all just happening by randomness. There needs to always be an intruder to blame. Your brain won't blame itself. Your brain won't blame you. It will come up with an outside narrative. Something is happening to you. There's a perpetrator. And then it reaches into memory. And like any dream or nightmare, it's going to sometimes cast an image that is something that you already have for some reason in your head.
Right.
Maybe it's a dead relative. Maybe it's a witch. Maybe it's a ghost. Maybe it's a black smoke monster. But it basically has to come up with a reason really quickly. The room is not going to be empty ever. There has to be something inside the room doing this. And the combination of either trying to show you yourself or come up with a reason why it's happening creates like some sort of very scary image. And but it's trying to tell you a story. It's not just like you can't move and we don't know why. It's like you can't move because there's a witch sitting on top of you.
Weird.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, got into the science of it a bit and was like, this is so interesting. Like that all the tricks, any kind of brain stuff like that is so wild. It is such a amazing thing and we don't understand it that well. And the idea that it can like when it misfires, it basically does creative storytelling, especially because it's in REM.
Yeah.
And you perceive it as really happening and how scary that would be.
Totally.
I'm going to read you one more to close out. I'm just going to read you one more anecdote. I get sleep paralysis 4 to 5 times a year. It happens mostly when I fall asleep during the day. I have vague, nonspecific dreams, usually involving threat or danger. It's accompanied by a feeling of extreme dread, which then escalates into outright terror. I tend to have auditory hallucinations. The voice will be clear and I'll hear it as if someone's standing right next to me. I know I'm asleep, but the voice is real. Sometimes I also see a figure standing nearby. I try to scream, but I can't make a sound. I try to run, but can't move. Somewhere in my mind, I'm aware I'm asleep, but I cannot wake up or move. I'm pinned down. The only way to come round is to let the terror overwhelm me, and then I slowly come to. I don't wake up violently, thrashing, screaming, or sweating. I'm calm, but it takes me a couple of hours to feel normal again. That the feelings with sleep paralysis are profoundly intense, but based on a nonspecific threat. There is no monster, no axe murderer, no terrible accident. Just you, alone with your fear and unable to escape it. Which is so wild because you're locked in a room with you and that can be really scary.
It is. Trust me. I've been locked in a room with me for many years and it's the most terrifying. It's wild to me. Like the more we've covered so many cases and so many instances where we just talk about how powerful the brain is, whether that's like, you know, people who are experiencing DID from trauma or if it's mm-hmm. like sleep paralysis or sleepwalking, like the brain is a crazy thing and it really does do magnificent things like that we cannot grasp. Like it's really wild to me.
Magnificent and terrible.
Magnificent and terrible. My brain.
Just like this podcast.
Just like this podcast. Well, Quinn, thank you for making sense of the senseless and wow.
Yes, thank you. I did want to let everybody know that join Patreon. There's about a billion Bo-million episodes. Our April episode's about to come out and it's so good.
I want to be very clear. This April one is good. This episode's coming out like in May. So our May, say our
the May one is about to come out. It's going to be so good. It's insanely good. Also, I wanted to thank Ash Megan Books for their review of us where they said that we have the best audiobook reports and that she said she would love to see our show higher on the charts. We deserve it.
And thank you. That means so much.
I also wanted to say thank you to Julia's 10 who says that she joined Patreon. It is so worth it. And she said, I think this podcast has to blow up soon.
And same. Like,
you know what? We're waiting. Pins and needles. But thank you.
I will say this. I'm waiting. I am currently not holding my breath, but I'm hopeful. My heart is open and I am ready.
We are not holding our breath, but we are sleep paralysis, lying in fear, praying.
Lying in wait.
That we get so big that it feels like a weight on our chest and we can't scream or move. That's all we want.
That's all I want. Hey, dearest readers, we love you. And I know I'm so appreciative of all of you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And Quinn, hey, I love you too.
I love you too.
Okay, goodbye. Bye.